Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The number of workers exercising their right to strike has plummeted since the 1970s. According to a survey from the current population, 40 years ago, an average of 289 major work stoppages involving 1,000 or more workers occurred annually in the United States. By the 1990s, that number had fallen to about 35 per year. And in 2009, there were no more than five. But even though the number of strikes is dwindling, the number of big strikes, workers are still walking out of work and taking to the streets to stand for better wages, health care, and working conditions. On May 17th, over 3,100 nurses and technicians in the California Nurses Association began a seven-day strike at five Northern California Sutter Health hospitals. UCSF patient care workers just ended their two-day strike yesterday. The concession union workers at the Giants recently voted almost unanimously to authorize a strike. And musicians with the San Francisco Symphony ended their strike in late March after they agreed to a 26-month contract. So on today's Your Call, we are talking about what makes an effective strike in today's labor climate. What has changed over the past few decades? We'll definitely look at union membership, which has also plummeted. How do strikes affect public opinion? Have you participated in a successful strike? How did you decide whether to vote yes or no? And what makes a strike effective? Today, we're joined by John Logan, professor and director of labor and employment studies at San Francisco State. He's written widely on labor management relations in the U.S. and around the globe. And John joins us in studio. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
We're also joined by David Gaudry. He's been a violist with the San Francisco Symphony since 1982. David has also been the chair of the San Francisco Symphony Musicians Negotiating Committee since 2004, and he represented musicians in their recent strike. This was David's third contract negotiation. And David also joins us in studio. Hi, David. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. And we're joined by Catherine Leibarger, president of AFSCME Local 3299, the union that led the recent UCSF patient care worker strike, which ended yesterday. Local 3299 represents 21,000 patient care and service workers at the University of California's five medical centers and 10 campuses. Catherine has been a union activist for 10 years. Hi, Catherine. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you.
Well, it's great to have all of you. And John Logan, I want to start off with you because it's not surprising because of when you look at, you know, the attacks on unions, but wow, the numbers have really gone down over the last four decades.
Right. And as you say, I mean, strikes are down to, you know, very, very minimal levels today. Only 0.1% of all working time in America is now lost to major strikes and lockouts, which, you know, by historical standards and by international standards is an extremely low number. So basically a couple of things have happened. One, as you say, is the continued decline of unions, particularly in the private sector. Unions in the private sector only represent now a sliver of the workforce, 6.6% in the private sector. So, you know, one would expect, you know, when you have a union decline of that magnitude, then the number of strikes is also likely to decline. The second thing is really the employer offensive against unions and collective bargaining that started in the 1970s and has continued to the present day. Employers actually have had the right to permanently replace economic strikers. They can't fire them, but they can permanently replace them. Is a difference that makes is meaningful to lawyers, but probably not to workers who lose their jobs when they go out and strike. But they didn't really exercise that right until the 70s and 80s. But with the change in the economy during that period and the heightened incentives to oppose unions and collective bargaining, the strike has really been turned into a virtually suicidal weapon for many workers. And you know, most workers are genuinely and very understandably extremely fearful about going out and strike, because for most workers, if you go out and strike, you're highly likely to lose your job.
Those are pretty strong words, a suicidal weapon.
Yeah, I mean, old-fashioned strikes, you know, which were a sort of war of attrition between the union and the employer, but where there was no sort of notion that the employer would actually try to permanently replace the workforce, are really a thing of the past. And so, I mean, you mentioned strikes that we have seen in the last few years, but these often are strikes of a different nature. You know, we have local targeted actions, you know, either by Walmart workers or fast food workers. We have strikes in healthcare, which has been one of the growth areas in the economy and growth areas for unions. But often these two are defensive strikes or strikes to try and preserve wages and pensions and healthcare benefits. Actually, another very interesting thing that's happened in the last few years is the number of employer lockouts has actually increased as the number of strikes has decreased. So when you look at the number of major work stoppages, the figure that you quoted, an increasing number of these are employers who are locking out their workforce to try and get major concessions. They're making an offer that the workforce refuses, and then the employer says, don't come back to work until you're prepared to accept this. So, you know, in that sense, you could say the picture is very grim, but, you know, there are other hopeful, more hopeful things going on that we can talk about.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about hopeful things. I also wanted to ask you, before we talk about the strikes, specific strikes, what about public perception? How has that changed over the years?
Well, again, you know, when unions represent such a very small percentage of the workforce, I think it, you know, it can be difficult for unions because, you know, most employees think that unions and strikes are largely irrelevant to their lives. That, you know, maybe sometimes they think that the people are lucky to have jobs. Unionized workers tend to have better wages, better benefits than non-union workers. And so, you know, sometimes there may not be a great deal of sympathy, but that's not always the case. I mean, if you look at one very successful strike last fall by the Chicago Teachers Union, they had very, very deep and significant support within the community, within parents whose children go to public schools in Chicago. So, but those types of community alliances and support, take a long time to build up. And, you know, most successful strikes involve that type of effort on the part of unions. But I think also, again, you're going back to the walkouts by fast food workers, perhaps reactions are mixed, but I think, you know, when a lot of people look at the poverty wages that, you know, that people are paid in the fast food industry, that, you know, you really have to work several jobs in order to survive, that many people are working full time, but still having to rely on public assistance. I think, you know, they would look at these jobs and say, well, you know, maybe it's surprising that it's taken this long for them to walk off the job.
And that is John Logan, professor and director of labor and employment studies at San Francisco State University. Catherine Leibarger is president of AFSCME Local 3299, the union that led the recent UCSF patient care worker strike, which ended, I believe, early this morning, right, Catherine?
Yes, that's right, at 4 o'clock.
So give us a little background. And how many workers actually went on strike, and why did they decide to actually walk out?
Sure. So actually, just for clarification, you're right. There, you know, it was a UCSF strike. It was also a UC Davis, UC Irvine, UC San Diego, and UCLA strike. And I had the good fortune to visit picket lines at all these places in the last 2 days. And what I saw were thousands and thousands and thousands of, highly trained healthcare professionals out there on the sidewalk picketing for their patients. You know, it's our folks were out on the line for the last 2 days doing what we do for the other 363 days of the year, which is fight for good patient care in the hospitals. We, for years, have been seeing problems in the medical centers at UC. And, you know, just the UC Med Centers are highly regarded. We think that they should be, you know, basically the jewel in the crown in California. And our members are seeing something different, though. You know, we're seeing big problems that pose a real risk to the patients that we dedicate our lives to taking care of. And while the folks who run these hospitals don't feel the effects personally of cost cutting or corner cutting, and they don't feel the effect of putting a stopwatch to the amount of time a radiation technologist gets to spend with one of their patients, they don't feel it. But certainly the patients feel it, the family members of that patient feel it, and our folks who provide that care go home every day feeling it. They feel the cuts, and it's just not acceptable. We can't take it anymore. For years we've been trying to bring it to the administration. It's fallen on deaf ears, and so after almost a year of sitting at the bargaining table with them, trying to make headway on winning things in our contract that would be better for patients, and again, getting nothing from the administration, it was time to escalate and actually take it to the public and really try and get the story out.
And what goes on behind the scenes when you all meet to decide whether or not to go on a strike and how long it will last?
Honestly, it's just paying attention to, are we getting any movement at the table, right? From the university, we're raising concerns around patient care and safe staffing. We want staffing committees. We want to see the university stop replacing well-experienced, permanent career workers who have the ability to advocate for themselves and their patients. It shouldn't be replaced by temporary workers, right? So we're not seeing any movement from the university on that. And for us, it's about organizing the sentiment and the feeling that already exists among our members in the hospitals. And the boss's total lack of response to our concerns plays a huge organizing effort as well. People are angry. They're just angry at, frankly, the callous response on the part of the executives that run the place. The CEO at UCLA brings in $1.5 million in base salary. The CEO, Mark Larratt, at UCSF takes in $1.2 million in base salary. He got a $300,000 bonus this last year as he eliminated 300 frontline patient care jobs. That helps organize our folks. So in the face of that, while we're pushing for good patient care, that's what goes on behind the scenes, is we see these realities unfold, and it builds people's willingness and need to fight back.
And Catherine, I know you have to leave us in about a minute. What's interesting is you've got obviously media coverage, and the media decides what to focus on, right? For example, sure. A couple of headlines talked about the fact that people weren't receiving chemo and that they weren't going to have their surgeries. And also, I read in the LA Times piece that hospital staff gave patients earplugs so they wouldn't have to listen to everyone demonstrating outside. How do you deal with that? And then also just public perception. What is your main goal? Because obviously you want public support when you take to the streets.
Right. We understood absolutely that getting our story out is essential. And it's why everyone took to the streets. We don't expect the university to embrace a strike with open arms. Certainly they've resisted our efforts for years to raise these issues with them. But our folks have an important story to tell that is real, it's true, and people who walk through those doors as patients or as other healthcare professionals, doctors and nurses, see what we see. And, they support us. I got a call. I got a message from a patient, actually, who called my office phone. I got it Saturday morning. She said, look, as a patient at UC Irvine, I don't ever want to go back in there. I see how hard you guys work. Mm-hmm. I pressed that call button, and nobody came for half an hour. And when finally somebody did come, I could tell she was working incredibly hard, had double the level of patients that she normally would have had. And I just felt for her. I really want you guys to win this because, frankly, I don't feel I was treated very well in the hospital, but I know that you guys are working really hard to take care of us, so please just know that I support you, and I really hope you win.
And Catherine, the strike ended early this morning. It was a two-day strike. What happens from here on out?
So, you know, as I said, every day our folks go into the hospital, and they're fighting for their patients, and that's what we did for 2 days. Today, everyone goes back, and we continue to fight for our patients, and, you know, the university can continue to do what they've been doing, which is, you know, have a blind eye and a deaf ear to these issues that are real and escalating, or they can come around and start to work with us. But what we do, this fight for our patients, it'll only intensify. Things have to change. We're dedicated to that.
Well, Catherine, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That is Catherine Leibarger. She's president of AFSCME Local 3299, the union that led the recent UC patient care worker strike, which ended early this morning. And you can find out more about this strike at yourcallradio.org. We're also joined today by John Logan, professor and director of labor and employment studies at San Francisco State, and David Gaudry. He's been a violist with the San Francisco Symphony since 82. He's also been the chair of the Symphony Musicians Negotiating Committee since 2004. Their 18-day strike ended in late March, and we'll get details from David in just a couple minutes. We'd also love to hear from you. When you look at the numbers, I mean, you're talking an average of 289 major strikes for 40 years ago. This happened yearly. By the 1990s, that fell to about 35 a year, and now we're no more than maybe five. So what are your thoughts on how this has changed? How has public perception of strikes changed over the years? How has your opinion of strikes changed? If you've ever been on strike, we'd love to hear from you. And how do you decide whether or not to strike? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. So, David, I noticed you shaking your head when Catherine Leibarger said that people were really angry and they just got to a point where they were fed up.
Well, as she was describing the sort of economic structure of the hospitals and the workers and the university, a lot of this seemed to resonate with what we're seeing as well in the structure of the symphony, which is probably not what somebody off the street or the average concert goer might imagine, but it is a nonprofit. But the members of our board of governors represent, you know, many major industries. You know, we've got the family that owns The Gap is represented on our board. Wells Fargo Bank has a high presence there and that kind of thing. But I just quickly want to flash back to something that John said much earlier, which was the higher degree of lockouts and lower degree of strikes that we see. And last year in 2012, in the symphony orchestra world, we're calling that now the year of the lockout. There were four major lockouts at symphony orchestras, the Atlanta Symphony, the Indianapolis Symphony, St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, and most notably the Minnesota Orchestra is still locked out. They were locked out last October. They canceled their entire season. And as we look at them, that's a nonprofit that is renovating the lobby of its building for $50-something million. They have several hundred million dollars in their war chest in the endowment, and yet they came to their workers and asked them to take approximately 40% pay cut. When the symphony players in Minnesota resisted that, they just said, don't come back to work until you're ready to talk. So it's been a highly controversial situation. Here in San Francisco, it's a little bit different, but as talking about these UC hospitals, we saw some of the same kinds of features, just this sort of lack of responsiveness, lack of feedback from our management. They came in with proposals to freeze the wages for 3 years, to drastically roll back healthcare coverage and pension, and really just didn't move for a long, long time. And the players got more and more agitated. And when we came to the point of declaring a stoppage, there was pretty unanimous feeling in our group, which I think is a little unusual for a union. It's a small, you know, bargaining unit, a little over 100 people, but they were absolutely intent on sending a message, and, the strike is what ensued.
John, when you watched this strike, right, what were your thoughts in terms of what was effective?
Well, I mean, what you were describing about the lockout, sorry, just to go back to that quickly, I think is also quite representative of what's happening in the private sector, because, you know, the companies that are locking workers out in order to achieve major concessions are not, for the most part, companies that are desperately trying to survive. You know, they need to insist on huge wage cuts, huge benefit cuts in order to survive. Many of these companies are actually making record profits, but at the same time are demanding enormous concessions from their workers. We were mentioning a little bit before the show, it's noticeable that, you know, often strikes and also lockouts in recent years have included groups of workers like the symphony, like professional sports players, who I mean, have real issues, because, you know, often the careers are very short and so on. But they have a certain amount of leverage that has allowed them, to win in many cases a new contract and not to suffer the same fate that, you know, too many workers are suffering in the private sector, in terms of stagnating wages and in terms of fear of employer retaliation in the workplace and disappearing health and pension benefits, and so. They're in some ways a privileged group of workers. I don't mean that in a negative sense. I mean, you know, they have a bargaining leverage that most workers in the private sector do not have. And also, just going back to our discussion of the AFSCME strike at the UC healthcare facilities, that I think is another good example of a union that was going to the public and, you know, making the case that it was actually the union that was trying to protect patient care, that the people running the hospital were more concerned with executive compensation than they were providing for the frontline employees, who are actually the ones that, you know, that care for patients, and that, you know, the understaffing is which is a major issue in the dispute, is something that will really hurt patients. And you see that also, incidentally, in the California Nurses Association with their ongoing dispute with the Sutter healthcare chain, which has, you know, been going on for at least a couple of years now, and they've had a number of one-day strikes in Northern California.
And we're going to go to break in just a minute. But, David, you've been doing this for a while. You've been on the San Francisco Symphony Musicians Negotiating Committee since 2004. What has this last strike, what did it tell you about public perception? Because I know that the wages got so much media attention, right? And a lot of people said, well, look, they make over $100,000. So what were your thoughts on just how the public sees that wages and sort of what they, quote, deserve? Because we're definitely going to talk about this after the break when we talk to a Giants concession worker.
Right. I mean, I think one thing to remember is that, and I'm sure I'm speaking for all the union representatives you're going to hear this morning, I mean, we sign up to do these careers because we want to work. As musicians, we want to play. We love music. We perform. It's what we do. Going on strike is way down our list of desires. I mean, we would much prefer not to go on strike. Having said that, I mean, if you look at the efficacy of initiating a labor stoppage, I mean, for us, I mean, it has a certain negative power. You know, if we were longshoremen and we could stop the docks, or if we were Teamsters and we could stop, you know, the movement of freight, there's a definite economic impact which you can measure. For a symphony orchestra musician, it's not that simple. We're a nonprofit, meaning we lose money and we do it very well. But there is a public aspect to it in that the symphony survives on raising money through philanthropic giving and selling tickets, and a stoppage is kind of a way to bring to the public awareness that there's a problem in-house. And I think that's...
And hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break. Today on Your Call, we are talking about strikes. What makes a strike effective, and how does it shape public perception? It's Your Call. We'll be back after this.
It's known all around the world now.
Local Public Radio, KALW San Francisco, online, KALW.org. Matt Martin has joined us here in studio during this short break in Your Call.
This is the final half hour in KALW's spring membership campaign, and we are down to $22,000 to go toward our goal. We are going to close it down in 30 minutes. Your support right now at 800-525-9917. Well, let us say yes, this better way of fundraising can work, and yes, local public radio is strong for the future. 800-525-9917.
Paul Exley of San Rafael called earlier this morning and says KALW does a wonderful job of keeping him informed, not only locally, but worldwide as well. That's what we do at Local Public Radio. We'd also like to thank Brooke Solija of Saratoga. Thank you, Brooke.
And Jaime Rush, a new member here in San Francisco. Thank you, Jaime, for going to KALW.org. Whether you go online or make a call, your support makes a huge difference here. This program, 100% listener supported. Everything at KALW made possible by the people who listen. 800-525-9917. Don't wait. Just a few minutes left in this drive, 800-525-9917.
Shorter is Better membership campaign wraps up in about 29 minutes. Join us today while you still have this opportunity to support local public radio. 800-525-9917 or online at kalw.org.
800-525-9917, kalw.org. In the final minutes of our spring campaign, give your support. Be part of something really positive. We're growing something good here together. 800-525-9917.
In support of Rose Aguilar and Your Call and all of the other programs that KALW produces right here in our own little studios, 800-525-9917 or online at kalw.org. It's the final day of the spring membership campaign. Please join us today. And now back to more with Rose Aguilar.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. We will be talking about media coverage of taxes. So we hope you join us for that. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about strikes. According to an analysis of current population survey, 40 years ago, an average of 289 major strikes took place annually in the U.S. In the 90s, that had fallen to about 35 per year, and now no more than five. So we know why this is happening. Massive union attacks. The labor movement has just drastically changed in the last 40 years. But people are still striking. People are walking off the job. So what are your thoughts on strikes today? What makes an effective strike? What about public perception of strikes? If you've ever taken part in one, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. We've got full lines. We'll have one open in a couple minutes. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. We're joined today by John Logan, professor and director of labor and employment studies at SF State. David Godrey has been a violist with the San Francisco Symphony since 1982. Their 18-day strike ended in March with a 26-month contract. And now I would like to go to Anthony Wendelberger. He is a concession worker at the AT&T Park, San Francisco Giants, calling us on his short lunch break. Hi, Anthony. Thanks for calling in.
You got it. Absolutely. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you. So what do you do for the Giants?
I'm actually a cook.
And how long have you been doing that?
Just about 3 years since the 2010 season.
Okay, so if I understand correctly, based on all the data I've been reading, you all have not received a raise in 3 years, right?
That's correct. And actually, I just realized you mentioned I work for the Giants. We actually work for Center Plate, which is a contractor for the Giants.
Okay, so Center Plate is in South Carolina, and so they're contracted to provide concessions.
That's correct.
Okay. But the Giants does make, what, 55 cents off of every dollar?
That is, that's true.
Okay. So if you're buying a $10 beer and it is $10 to buy a beer at a Giants game, the Giants are pulling in $5.50. So can you talk a little bit about, and I know you don't have much time because you're on your lunch break, but why did you, 97% of the workers voted to go on a strike?
Yeah. Everything, all the core issues really come down to a kind of an umbrella issue, and that's really respect. The core issues really are, job security, which we're just looking to make sure that if something happens with Center Plate, that, we all still have a job. Because, like you said, we are directly working for Center Plate. But at the end of the day, who do we really work for? We work for the Giants. Another major issue is health care. They're really trying to change the health care. We've had health care since the Giants have been in San Francisco, and they're really looking to change that. And then another major issue is the wages. Like you mentioned, we haven't had a wage increase since, I believe it was April 1st or something like that of 2009. And our average annual wage for our workers is $11,000 a year. Another issue is benches for breaks. A lot of folks, they take their breaks standing up, or they find a box or something, you know, just to sit on, or sometimes they just sit on the floor.
Hmm.
What does that speak about respect?
And the other thing is, I ran into a couple workers the other night, and they said, you know, when you go to a game, you're in this excited mood, you want to have fun, and you don't realize how hard it is to do this job because the stadium is almost always packed, and you've got people just constantly coming to the concession stand. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, the fans really make it. They are what makes it. That's why after, so many years of, no changes, why we're still, people are still coming to work. You know, we enjoy the fans. We love the fans. And we love our jobs. And like you said, it's busy. And, each stand pulls in, for example, about $15,000 to $25,000 each game. And there's, I believe, more than 40 stands.
Wow, that's a lot of money. And Anthony, I understand that you actually drive 2 hours to get to AT&T Park in San Francisco?
Yeah, just about. I think the drive itself is like an hour and 50 minutes, but it's a 10-minute walk inside. So.
And is that because you can't afford housing in the Bay Area?
Absolutely.
And there, a lot of people are like that. I've heard that some people drive from Sacramento to get to the park.
Yeah, that's actually where I live.
Oh, you live in Sacramento.
Yeah, Sacramento.
So 800 workers, 97% voted to strike. When will you decide whether or not to actually strike? And what will that?
Know,
how will that?
Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
How will you make that decision?
We haven't... we're really at this time playing it close to the vest, and we're just trying to, we really don't want to say a whole lot about that at this time. You know what I mean?
All right. Well, and you're asking Giants fans to bring their own food to the stadium.
Absolutely. I mean, we come to the games. We love the Giants, but center plate, they make their money from the food. The fans are there or not. Doesn't affect them unless they're spending money in the concession stands.
John, do you have a question for Anthony before we let him go?
I think it's fascinating what he's saying, and I do think it's similar to what's been happening in other places with fast food workers walking off the job. I mean, they are not represented by a union. Obviously, at the Giants Stadium, they are by Local 2 of HERE. But I wonder if there's any, if these other strikes and walkouts amongst fast food workers or Walmart workers have been an inspiration in any way to people?
We do look at that. We do support, of course, our union brothers and sisters in the non-union as well, of trying to, better their lives. I actually have worked in non-union houses, and I see, I'm sure we've all worked at places where, it's not a union and it's a great job, but some of us have also worked in places where it's not union and, it's just not that great. So we do understand what their struggles are about, and we support that absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Anthony, for calling in on your lunch break.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That's Anthony Wendelberger. He is a cook at AT&T Park with the San Francisco Giants. He actually does work for Center Plate. It's a company in South Carolina that provides concessions. The Giants gets 55 cents out of every dollar you spend on a beer or French fries and those kinds of things. Out of 800 workers, 97% voted to go on strike. They're asking people to bring their own food, and then they'll decide. And David, when you were hearing Anthony, what about that solidarity? We don't really see that much where... I'm sure maybe a Walmart worker would stand up for the Giants concession worker, but would a member of the symphony also stand in solidarity with a concession worker?
Well, absolutely. I mean, when we were picketing and were in the middle of our stoppage, we experienced a great deal of support from, all different kinds of unions. The teachers' union, we had members of their local walking the picket line with us. Tim Paulson, the head of the local labor council, is a great organizer and support. And, as we're standing on the sidewalk with our picket signs, every truck and Teamster driver would honk his horn, and the Muni drivers and that kind of thing. So, I mean, I thought that was in the midst of a kind of a depressing moment. It was really a nice lift to see that there is that kind of community spirit amongst local union members.
That is David Gaudry. He's been a violist with the San Francisco Symphony since 1982. He represented musicians in their recent strike, which ended in late March. John Logan is professor and director of labor and employment studies at San Francisco State. And we've got a number of callers on the line. Thanks for waiting patiently. Let's go to Roger in San Francisco. Hi, Roger.
Yes, hi. I'd like to mention a few things. One is many people who are working in non-union jobs and have overtime and have a 40-hour work week and vacation time owe that to unions. Unions fought for those things. The quality of life in this country has been uplifted by unions. I don't think any union worker wants to go on strike. It costs them money. It's hard on their families. But they fight because there's no other way. They can't get employers to see their argument. In the early 20th century in this country, they fought and died for workers in this country. So when people see strikers out there, in a way they should thank God that there are people willing to fight. And I've been a union worker for years. I've been retired now. But even my own retirement check has been fought for and worked for by other union members. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Roger. John?
I think it's important to stress when I was talking about, more positive developments, including fast food workers' walkouts, I didn't mean to suggest that I think strikes are a good thing. I actually don't. If you look at northern European countries that have more cooperative forms of employment relations, strike levels there are very low. But they're low because workers have a voice, because for the most part, they have decent wages and benefits, and there's a process for resolving grievances at the workplace. In the United States, unfortunately, we have and have had for many, many years a very adversarial system of employment relations. But despite the fact that, we've had stagnating, in some cases declining incomes and, benefits that are disappearing and there's a middle class squeeze that's going on. Despite all of that, we still see very, very, very low strike levels. So it's not low strike levels that's based on a cooperative system. It's low strike levels despite the fact that the system is very adversarial and the conditions for the overwhelming majority of workers are getting worse.
Well, and just this morning, Walmart warehouse workers in Southern California are exposing dangerous working conditions, including blocked fire exits, frequent collapses of heavy boxes stacked 30 feet high, and lack of adequate drinking water. This is in Southern California. They are trying to raise awareness about this. They're going to have a press conference today at noon. So it's also interesting to watch this happening. They've got no protections.
Right. And last year, of course, we saw the first real strikes in Walmart's 50-year history. And, in many ways, that too has been somewhat inspirational, I think, because, these are workers who, as you say, have no protections. They work for an employer who's very anti-union. And, they have every reason to fear retaliation by their employer for participating in these walkouts and for speaking speaking out against bad labor conditions. But despite all of that, they have been doing so. And it's remarkable. I mean, we were talking earlier about, you know, the sort of solidarity or support for the symphony and other groups that you get in the Bay Area. Now, and of course, we know that San Francisco is not like most of the rest of the country. You know, there are other places, New York, Chicago, L.A., where you have strong union support. But with the Walmart workers, you know, you saw workers in Dallas, you saw workers, you know, all across the country walking off the job and protesting against conditions. And these are very, very unlikely groups of workers to participate in this type of action for any number of reasons.
All right. Well, thank you again for calling in, Roger. Let's go next to David in San Francisco. Hi, David.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to give you a little bit of history. In 1980, I was a union officer in a local of the United Steelworkers working for Phelps Dodge, and we went on strike 6 months after the air traffic controllers were fired by Reagan. And basically what the executives of PD said was, oh, you can fire these guys? So when we went on strike, they told us that they had just hired our permanent replacements. And I grew up in a house that was a household that was a union household. My father came back from World War II, got help with a down payment on a house and an education, and got a good union job that did us very well and did the community very well. And I am certain that the real turning point, the beginning, was Reagan firing the air traffic controllers. In Europe, that would have been illegal. I'd like to hear some comments from your panel about what other situations, how such a situation for a union member in the United States differs from a similar union member in Europe.
I mean, on the PATCO strike, the air traffic controller strike, you mentioned, I mean, that was, of course, absolutely, you know, tremendously important. It was an illegal strike, and so, you know, the government, you know, Reagan, had, you know, was within his rights to sack them for participating in this strike, but it certainly gave the green light to employers all across the country that it was okay to do this. The practice of permanently replacing economic strikers and threatening to permanently replace anyone who went on strike actually started in the 1970s. You know, a few years before PATCO, it became quite a common employer tactic, but it spread massively after PATCO. And, you know, it's during this time that I mentioned before that the strike was turned into a sort of, you know, virtually suicidal weapon for many unions and for many employers. PATCO really sort of normalized this sort of like very aggressive employer action against striking workers that we saw in the 1980s, and, you know, which has in a large part contributed to the drastic decline in strike numbers.
And David, just quickly before we go to our next guest with the California Nurses Association, where do you, just given the experience you have with strikes, where do you see this going at a time when wages are flat and people are desperate for jobs and there is so much retaliation and very little worker protection?
Right. Well, a lot of that has to do with what's going to happen in the stock market, what's going to happen with the housing market. I mean, we've been through a period since, I guess, 2008 of extremely high unemployment. And, you know, corporations and employers have discovered that they have all this, newfound leverage against workers. And I think it's pretty obvious that they've been exploiting it with abandon. But, I think there were numbers from the Labor Department today or yesterday, much lower, new claims for unemployment insurance. And so, you know, and I think that's the general trend. The Dow is at an all-time high. I'm hearing that at least in the Bay Area, the housing market has really made its turn. So hopefully we're going to see a reversal of that trend and hopefully a commensurate increase in, workers' rights and ability to demand, cost of living increases in their wage, hang on to the pension benefits that they have, or even, gain new pension benefits, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, that's my hope. And if that comes to pass, then we'll probably see changing of the trends in the lockouts and the strikes and what have you.
Well, and we'll talk about how we might get there and worker protection. That's David Gaudry. He's a violist with the San Francisco Symphony. He represented musicians in the recent strike, which ended in late March. John Logan is professor and director of labor and employment studies at San Francisco State. And now I'd like to welcome Anthony Baraceros. He's a nurse with the California Nurses Association. On May 17th, over 3,100 nurses and technicians began a seven-day strike at five Northern California Sutter Health hospitals. Hi, Anthony. Welcome to the show.
Hello. How are you?
Good, thank you. Well, the nurses are definitely no strangers to strikes, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So what makes an effective strike in today's labor climate?
I believe what makes an effective strike is solidarity, trying to get as many nurses or employees out on the picket line to show some kind of solidarity and not crossing the picket line. So if we're out there, the more numbers we have, you know, the more visually it looks more stunning and, you know, sends a message to the public and to Sutter and the nurses' case.
What do you hear from the public? How has public perception of strikes changed over the years?
I'm not sure. You know, there's pros and cons, I guess, both how we're perceived. I think people now, the way the economic climate is and the way CEOs are getting paid right now, I think we have a lot of great public support. You know, a lot of people are fed up with being exploited, and you know, we're out there on the line. This is our ninth strike in 2 years, so we've been out there quite often, and the public reception, I think, has been good.
Ninth strike in 2 years.
Yes.
What have you really learned throughout this process? I mean, when you're seeing everyone from members of the symphony to Walmart warehouse workers who don't have access to clean water trying to raise awareness, where do you see this going in the future as, you know, wages are flat and jobs are still incredibly hard to come by?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's going to happen is I see the future of, you know, the workers is they're just fed up with being exploited, and their managers or the CEOs of certain companies are, you know, making this outrageous salary, saying they're losing money, and they're not able to give us what we need, which is basic. You know, for the nurses, for our contract, we don't want to lose what we have, and we fought for, you know, years to get to where we were, and Sutter just wants to roll back what we had. So, you know, I think a lot of employees, they're sick and tired of being exploited, and, you know, they're finding out you can't just sit down and take it. We need to get up and fight and show solidarity, be out there so the public can see us and start asking questions to find out why we're striking now. And I think seeing picket lines and stuff, you know, makes the public curious, and that's when the dialogue can happen and we can educate, you know, the public. You know, with big corporations, are able to, you know, pay for media time and all this propaganda stuff. And so it's, you know, as a common worker, we need to get out into the public or on social media and educate people to, you know, so they know what's going on.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Anthony.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. That's Anthony Baraceros. He's a nurse with the California Nurses Association. Over 3,100 nurses and technicians began a seven-day strike at five Northern California Sutter Health hospitals on May 17th. We have an interesting email from Paul, who says, I'm a part-time faculty at CSU and a community college. And at community college, and participated in the 2011 rolling strike. The half-day and rolling strikes seems to be a gentle alternative to the balls-to-the-wall strike, but these strategies seem pretty toothless or not particularly disruptive. What are your opinions on that? And John, do you think this might become a trend?
Well, I think it, you know, in many ways already is somewhat of a trend. Your last speaker from the California Nurses Association is an ideal example. He mentioned they've had multiple strikes against Sutter over the past 2 years, but mostly 1-2 day strikes. You know, they're not these sort of all out battles of attrition, as I said, was often the case in the past. I mean, those really have disappeared to a large extent. Adjunct faculty, if your email mentioned, adjunct faculty are paid abysmally in most universities across the country, but they're becoming a larger part of the teaching workforce. And not surprisingly, they're turning to unions. You know, so all across the country, you have examples of adjunct faculty who have joined unions, who often are participating in these sort of limited one-day actions. It's difficult for people like teachers, including university teachers, nurses, and others, because you know they have to take the message that they're the ones protecting patient care. They're the ones that care about the quality of student education. So you know that's another reason for them not to participate in these sort of longer strikes. As your email mentioned, the problem with these sort of strikes of very short duration. By themselves, now often there are many other things going along with them to put pressure on the employer. But by themselves, you know, they often don't have any immediate results. You know, CNA has been involved in this very long-running dispute with Sutter, that's an issue.
We have a comment from William in Belvedere. We don't have time, William, but William said the only strikes that are effective are the ones where the jobs cannot be exported out of the country.
Yeah, and as I say, the fear of being permanently replaced is a very realistic and understandable fear. And so often you have groups of workers who have leverage who can't be easily replaced. You know, the symphony, the professional sports casters, the Boeing engineers, but even they have to be worried about jobs going to non-union South Carolina and so on. But it's these workers who have leverage who cannot, and nurses and who cannot be replaced, who cannot. And this is why we've seen a decline of unions and decline of strikes in manufacturing, because the fear of losing the jobs is just so great.
Yeah, but it seems like people have, like the Walmart workers say, that we're so desperate we are willing to put our jobs on the line because we want better working conditions.
Right. And Walmart workers and the fast food workers, I think, these are, again, not traditional strike actions. They're walkouts that have the support of community groups, have support of labor groups, focusing on very, very low wages.
And we will continue to follow this. John Logan, professor and director of labor and employment studies at SF State. David Godrey has been a violist with the symphony since 82. I can't wait to see you in action. Thank you, David, and thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
I'm Matt Martin, general manager of KALW, joining Joe Burke and Rose Aguilar to ask for your support in this final request in our spring membership campaign. We are under $20,000 to go toward our goal, thanks to everyone who has taken part in the Shorter is Better campaign. And right now would be a great time to push toward that goal with a call to 800-525-9917, 800-525-9917, or online at kalw.org.
That's right. You can go to the website and click on the Donate Now button. The advantage on the website is that you can take your time, scroll through the thank you gifts that we have available, fill in the form that we have there for you. That's at kalw.org. On the phone, you'll talk to one of our phone volunteers, 800-525-9917, or online, kalw.org.
800-525-9917, KALW.org. We are in the last throes of this membership drive. Shorter is better. We provide shows about everything from labor to the environment, the economy, all of these different voices coming together. Support that kind of radio. 800-525-9917. We have had an incredible morning so far, and we're almost done. A couple more minutes. You can also go online to kalw.org.
800-525-9917. Join Cheryl Pallas in San Leandro, Max Lowenstein in San Francisco, who in just the last hour gave their support to local public radio. Local public radio people are great people. You want to be one of them. 800-525-9917 or kalw.org.
800-525-9917, kalw.org. Support local independent radio that brings so many different members of the community together to have important dialogues day after day. 800-525-9917 or online, kalw.org.
800-525-9917, the last break of our spring campaign. If you love KALW, if you value the programming, do like Charles Renfro in San Francisco did. He went to KALW.org, made a contribution, and left a comment. You keep your listeners at the center of community broadcasting and respect the content you air. Charles, Thank you for that. That means a huge amount to us.
Last break, 800-525-9917. We've got so many new members.
Wonderful.
Also joining KALW, thank you. 800-525-9917, KALW.org. We need a community space like this to have these important conversations and to talk about alternatives. 800-525-9917. No interruptions. Shorter is better. Check out our Facebook page for some fun photos. 800-525-9917, KALW.org.
Help us make sure that we will go out of this membership campaign not only knowing that we have kept it short, but that we have made it powerful. That's what we're here to do, to grow this community resource. Every one of us coming together makes it happen. Thanks to Gregory Lewis in Berkeley, who gave his support to KALW San Francisco. 800-525-9917, KALW.org.
800-525-9917, KALW.org. Support local community radio at a time when there are 2 labor reporters in the country and about 10 focusing on the environment. We need a station like this to have longer dialogues that go in depth. 800-525-9917, KALW.org.
Rose, Matt, we have 30 seconds left in the spring membership
in the entire
drive.
Campaign.
Yeah.
We're going to come back at 11:30 and let you know how things wrap up. Your support in the next half hour can get
seconds.
Us there. 800-525-9917, KALW.org. We're going to go to the BBC. We're going to give you the news. You're going to have all your programming. That is what we are about, and we do it with your support.
7.5 days. 800-525-9917, KALW.org.
Five,
thank you.
Thanks so much.
KALW San Francisco.